Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You are listening to Flop Culture, a podcast where we mainly talk about flops, but we also talk about bops, hot goss, pop culture at large, and occasionally soap serial killers. I'm your host, Vanilla J. Thank you for listening to last week's episode on Richard Hillman with Graeme O'Toole. If you haven't already, go listen. Graeme will definitely be back. We had such a hoot, and I spent the days after that episode it came out and like reliving it again. I literally spent the days describing old Coronation Street characters in great detail to my family because they couldn't remember some of the names that came up. To the point where if my phone had been stolen, all of the tabs in Safari would have just been various Google searches like Maxine Curry or Ashley Peacock Curry. I opened that up in the middle of a work thing next to my sister and she was like, what the hell? Anyway, we've got our first film flop of season two, as chosen by my guest, all happening this week. But before that, let's talk about some news. Madonna got rinsed at this year's Grammys, right? And I'm not gonna, we're so far past Grammys and opinions about the Grammys and all that jazz. In my opinion, Beyonce should have won Album of the Year. And Harry Styles' speech wasn't great, but also he was nervous. And also that album is good too. But anyway, I said I wasn't gonna get into it, so I'm not. What I am gonna get into is Madonna and this ongoing conversation around how she looks. And like even that sentence shouldn't be a thing, but it is, regrettably. So she was presenting an award, or she was introducing, rather, Kim Petras and Sam Smith at the Grammys. And her appearance at the award ceremony and how she looked at the award ceremony was the talk of social media, water coolers everywhere, as it has been for the last... I mean, she's always kind of faced these conversations in her career, but definitely in the last, I would say, 4 or 5, they've accelerated greatly and they haven't always been the most positive. She's since come out and released her own Instagram statement, and here's what she had to say. It was an honour for me to introduce Kim Petras and Sam Smith at the Grammys. I wanted to give the last award, which was Album of the Year, but I thought it was more important that I present the first trans woman performing at the Grammys, a history-making moment. And on top of that, she won a Grammy. Instead of focusing on what I said in my speech, which was about giving thanks for the fearlessness of artists like Sam and Kim, many people chose to only talk about close-up photos of me, taken with a long-lens camera, by a press photographer that would distort anyone's face. Once again, I am caught in the glare of ageism and misogyny that permeates the world we live in. a world that refuses to celebrate women past the age of 45 and feels the need to punish her if she continues to be strong-willed, hardworking, and adventurous. I have never apologised for any of the creative choices I have made, nor the way that I look or dress, and I'm not going to start. I have been degraded by the media since the beginning of my career, but I understand that this is all a test, and I am happy to do the trailblazing so that all the women behind me can have an easier time in the years to come. In the words of Beyonce, you won't break my soul. I look forward to many more years of subversive behaviour, pushing boundaries, standing up to the patriarchy, and most of all, enjoying life. Bow down, bitches. And look, I'm not going to lie and say I haven't engaged in conversations around Madonna's face or anyone's appearance. It's a really easy trap to fall into, like way easier to externalise than it is to internalise and look internally and talk about ourselves and everything like that, blah, blah, blah. And I think there is maybe an argument to be made about how she edits her pictures online. But again, there's an argument to be made against that. In which, and you know, like it's her Instagram, she can do what she wants. It's also, it's not like, I don't think she's necessarily being deceptive that way in terms of how she looks. Like it's very easy to Google her. You can look up the Grammys and see how she looks. I don't think anyone looks at her Instagram and is like, this is how she looks. And then even then, why would you be bothered? On the opposite side of that argument. But it's just, is sad the right word? I'm not sure. It's just really frustrating that she's in her mid-60s now and has been banging this drum her entire career. And I think, while I think this is a great sentiment, and I think especially when she talks about like, it's terrifying to people because she's just simply enjoying life and people can't understand that. I think her point on patriarchy and men and that comparison and how it's not actually ageism, like it's sexism. She actually put it best during a moment on the Madame X press tour that I saw on former guest Jen Gannon shared it on her Instagram. She put it so eloquently. I'm going to leave it here because nobody says it better than Madonna herself.
Well, that's an extension of sexism, because if I were a man, we wouldn't even be discussing my age. The reason we're discussing my age is because women are marginalized, and we always have been considered second-class citizens. And if we aren't young and we aren't pretty, we are condemned by society. And that's very sexist. Mm-hmm. That you could be, you know, the most unattractive man in the world and no one gives you a problem about it.
True.
But if you're a female, there's a standard that you need to follow and behavior that's expected of you. And if you reach a certain age and you are still behaving in an adventurous way, in a sexual way, you're still having fun, you're still curious, you're still alive, you're not, you are looked down on and you are discriminated against and you are persecuted, and it has everything to do with being a female.
Yup, Madge. That's what I have to say. I'm going to see her in Antwerp on this tour. I've never seen her before. I'm very excited. And obviously I will be bringing you all along with me in some capacity, and you'll be getting the full rundown as to what the show is like. I'm really, 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 really looking forward to it. Elsewhere, Leonardo DiCaprio is dating a 19-year-old. Or is he? Apparently he's not. Apparently they're just mates. And maybe not even mates. They may or may not have just been sitting next to each other. If they are just mates, my question is, why at 19 years old do you want to be friends with a 50-year-old? And I know I just made a whole argument about maybe we shouldn't be ageist towards people. Maybe I've just imploded that entire argument. Actually, you know what? If you want to go play up with, you know, a man, that's fine. That's fine. You be Russell. Is that what that child is called an up? You do you, babe. I'm not, whatever. But anyway, this obviously set the internet alight because this is like significantly younger than the women he usually goes for. They're usually 24. And people are a bit cross because this is, I think people are thinking maybe this is really the step too far. This is where we're going to get him. But apparently they're not together at all. They were seated next to each other at this party. An insider told People magazine, Leo and Eden Polani. They were just hanging out in the same group. And the insider went on to say, just because Leo might be talking to or sitting with a girl doesn't mean he's dating her. And this obviously comes after, you know, last year he was linked to Gigi Hadid, 27, geriatric, really dispelled that speculation that he doesn't date over 25. But yeah, you know what? I think Leo's missing a trick on this, right? I think Leo could 100% monetize this service that it's like, you want to be photographed with me, you want to get everyone talking, you're going to pay me, right? And you get, like, because who the hell was Eden Polanyi before 2 days ago? You know what I mean? He needs to start monetizing the service, right? You sit next to me, everybody talks about you, everyone knows who you are, you get this jump start to your career, you're an entrepreneur, you're a poet, you're doing whatever you want to do in life. You've an automatic platform there because you've sat next to me and I'm Leonardo DiCaprio and I'm known for this. And then he can donate the money to the environment since he's so into it, apparently. There you go, Leo. If you're there's a free idea there. It's a good idea at that. But I loved the headlines off the back of the story as well, that it's like, there's one and it's like, new report reveals what's really going on between Leonardo DiCaprio and Eden Polanyi. And it's like, we are none. What's really going on is they sat next to each other or near each other in a room. Oh my God. What a laugh. What a laugh. Anyway, speaking of teenagers. Oh, it's always important to make yourself laugh. Let's talk about this week's flop, shall we? What do you think of when you hear the words teen movie? For many, this will depend on when you were born. For example, I immediately go to Mean Girls. For others, it'll be Clueless, Bring It On, Heathers, the list goes on. Then on a different note altogether, what do you think about when you hear the words heist movie? For me, potentially regrettably, it's The Town. I'm a town apologist. I don't want to talk about it. Okay? I'm just going to leave that there. But what about when you bring the two together? Teen heist movie. And a conversation around female friendship. Of course. Everything goes back to that. That is exactly the conceit of this week's flop, Sugar and Spice. And joining me to talk about it is the brilliant journalist, Aoife Grace Moore. Enjoy. Aoife Moore, thank you so much for joining me on Flop Culture. How are you?
I'm grand. I had the best excuse to watch one of my favourite terrible films. So happy to be here.
Talk to me about this favourite terrible film of yours that you picked.
Okay, so the film I picked is the 2001 classic Sugar and Spice. Now, I will say, when you put Sugar and Spice into Google, it's a bakery in Wexford. So what you want to do is put on Sugar and Spice film.
Yeah.
It's very unfairly, I think, compared to Bring It On. But the only similarities is that it's a high school film about cheerleaders. That's where it like starts and ends. It's supposed to be like a dark comedy. It's not that funny.
It really isn't. There are sparkles. Great there's moments. Hints of something. Mm. But the majority of the stuff does not land.
No, the characters in no way, shape or form are believable. There isn't one person of colour, one gay person. It is very much of its time. It's a 2001 cheerleader high school film. Also, you know back in the day when you could just say whatever? There's quite a lot of fat phobia in it, quite a lot of homophobia in it. It's just a lot going on.
It is. It's truly one of those movies. They were just like, you know what? Minority groups, fuck them. You know,
not real. Just, not real.
Yeah, not real. We don't acknowledge them. They're not valid. So, yeah.
So the story follows Jack and Diane. And Diane is obviously the head cheerleader. And Jack is the quarterback, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
And they have much unprotected sex and get pregnant and their parents disown them. Very Ireland vibes. And they rent this shitty wee apartment and they're scant. I think, doesn't Jack work in like a chicken place?
He can't hold down a job basically because he's just like,
yeah, and he gets
like stereotypical dumb jock.
Yeah.
He's working in a Mexican restaurant and then a fried chicken place.
And then a video shop.
And then a video shop because the nerdy guys who work in the video shop are just like, oh my God, I can't believe this cool guy wants to work here and he'll be our friend. So they just give him a job but he's terrible at it.
What I also didn't get was like why these two 17-year-olds were in charge of hiring and firing.
Where's the HR there? You know what I mean?
No HR in that video rental shop whatsoever. So then he gets a job in the video shop. Diane is pregnant at home in charge of what he terms the baby machine, isn't it? Awful. And so they're scant and they don't know what they're going to do with their lives. And Jack also randomly wants to be a senator, of course. And she decides one night, Diane decides one night when she's watching, isn't she watching Heat? I think it's Heat. That to make enough money to get her life off the ground, that her and her cheer squad of unbelievable two-dimensional characters will rob a bank.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. It's actually, the cast isn't bad when you look at the careers that those people have had now since. So
yeah.
James Marsden is Jack.
Yeah.
Melissa
so
George.
So bloody handsome, I have to say. Like he
really?
Just, I think, yeah. I didn't.
Too clean looking for me.
Okay, that's fair. I never really got it. And then I saw him in this and I was like, he just has that like sparkle. That,
he looks like Prince Charming.
Yeah. Mm. Which makes sense because he plays a Prince Charming in Enchanted.
Well, I've never seen that.
Oh, there you go. No fair list.
So yeah, James Marsden, Melissa George, Mina Savari, like these people went on to have like pretty, and there's a couple other people you sort of half recognize from TV shows or whatever, but and Mina Savari, obviously there has to be a white trash element in this. So Mina Savari's mammy shot her dad when she was given birth to Mina Savari and has been in jail for her entire life. So they go to jail. And Mina Savari's mammy and all her prison inmate friends teach them how to rob a bank. And it's 120 minutes, which I love because films are too long now.
That was one of my notes, was that this is the perfect length of a film. I think it's 87 minutes in total. It is just chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Beginning, middle, ending. That's this all
is,
I want.
Put it this way, folks. This is not The Irishman. Like, you can watch this song on your iPhone. It won't take away from the cinematic experience.
You could watch this on the worst quality Barbie TV screen and the experience will not be compromised.
Actually, Woody Harrelson, so last night, I for research, watched this on a stream that I found online. But the subtitles were not for Sugar and Spice. They were clearly for some Russian gang drug dealing film. So it was like Jack and Diane like been like, I love you, baby, I love you, baby. And my subtitles were like, he's been dealing heroin for years.
which really
helped the adventure along.
This doesn't seem right.
Yeah, the characters of the cheer squad, they all have their own, they're kind of like the Spice Girls, certainly. They all have their wee characteristics. So there's the religious one, who throws the word whore around way too much for my own comfort.
For someone who's really into Jesus.
She says the word whore a lot. Yeah. Also anti-choice. Not my favourite character in it, to be honest. But preachy. Mina Savari is Kansas, who is the kind of raised by her granny and granddad because her mother's in jail. And yeah, she's supposed to be like the hardcore one.
Criminally underutilised in this movie.
Yes, and like also so beautiful.
Oh my God. Just really like so charismatic. You cannot take your eyes off her. And she's some of the best lines in it, which is, we've already discussed.
She is actually one of the few believable characters in it, to be fair.
Yeah.
Then there's like the smart one, who I think is called Sarah, who's going to Harvard, therefore doesn't know if she should rob the bank or not because she doesn't want to lose her scholarship. Then there is, Melissa George's character is completely insane. So she's supposed to be like the slut one, but she's for some reason obsessed with the TV presenter Conan O'Brien.
Has there ever been a more 2001 sentence? Like if I was to put a child in front of this now, the first thing they would say is, who the fuck is Conan O'Brien? That's her whole thing. Like her fantasy is that she's like in love with him and she wants to have this like all leather house with him and talks like in great detail about having sex with him pretty much.
Like, so she's supposed to be like the sensual one. So she's always rubbing herself, talking in this like really sexy voice like this all the time. And other than that, I don't think she has any characteristics. She's always got her leg up somewhere and like
That's the thing about this, because I did enjoy it. It's not without it, but it's very much product of its time. I wouldn't endorse a lot of the writing and some of the throwaway things, but at the same time I found myself really rooting for Jack and Diane, and I really liked the Diane character as someone who was like, you know, head cheerleader, whatever, falls in love, wants this life, is very much just like, I will do whatever it takes. And then by the time, but then I suppose by the time she is pregnant and they're kind of hatching this plan, all the friends are back together and it's like, right, I can only remember Mina Safari's character, and then the rest of you, I'm like, I do not care. I do not care enough about you. And you all seem like horrible friends anyway, and I'm supposed to believe that you're all working together then to hatch this plan. I was like, I don't care. Thing, I do not care.
I think the thing that makes it different is Diane is obviously supposed to be the head cheer leader. She is, from the outset, the world's most painfully positive person. Like, she gets up every morning and does affirmations in the mirror when she's like, good morning, sunshine. This is the greatest days of your life so far. And and she's also really, really, really nice, not just to your friends, but to other people in the school. Whereas like the archetype head cheerleader is always supposed to be like a total bitch.
Yeah.
And also the quarterback, which is usually seen as like this total bully character. Jack is not only thick as months, but also a very sweet boy.
So like, sweet. So sweet. So precious. Like, just want to go up and pinch his little cheeks and just go, oh.
And the baddie in this film is the head cheerleader from the B squad, who are kind of seen as kind of the rejects, and she really badly wants to be in the A squad. And what I enjoy about it is like, maybe the takeaway from this film is like, don't grass.
Don't be a grass.
Don't be a grass. Toy toy. So
that's extremely fair.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I liked about it, is like, it doesn't really follow. It's written by a woman, which I think, in some ways, you can tell that it is written by a woman, but also the rest of the friends' characters, the rest of the girls in the squad's characters are so two-dimensional and unbelievable. You would be forgiven thinking that they were written by men.
Yeah. Oh, unbelievably. So the thing with this was, though, like, and I suppose part of the reason why it flopped. So the whole thing was that obviously this came out kind of not very quickly after Bring It On. So Bring It On was August 2000.
And this was 2001.
This was 2001. This was out in January, which is kind of generally seen as like a dump month for studios for movies that they don't think are going to do well.
How dare they?
I know. Rude. Because in so many ways, like, it's so much fun and it like subverts that whole cheerleader teen movie thing. Anyway, and it's way more dark. But anyway, the film was originally titled Sugar, Spice and Semi-Automatics. But after the Columbine High School Massacre 1999, they were like, you know what? Maybe not. Maybe we'll change the title.
I actually read this, that it got a load of grief because people were saying that it was promoting like gun violence in America. It's like, I don't actually remember any mass shooting sense that involved five cheerleaders robbing a bank.
That's mad, isn't it?
But yeah, so it got a lot of flack when it first came out that it was promoting gun violence, because there is a couple of scenes in which they need to assemble the semi-automatic rifles by themselves using, I believe, duct tape and a nail file.
Yeah. Iconic. Very Totally Spies, isn't it? Very Totally Spies.
And again, because Diane is very practical and she's very positive, and she's like, I just see this as a huge opportunity. I find it hard to believe that Mina Savari's character wouldn't have punched her at some point, because she's so, so happy all the time. But yeah, so it got loads of grief. Then it was compared to Bring It On, and they said that, you know, it was like a poor man's Bring It On. But they're very different films, I think.
They're totally different films, but the whole thing of cheerleaders. There's cheerleaders in them.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about that was as well is Gabrielle Union actually wanted to be in Sugar and Spice.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She didn't want to be in Bring It On. Like, she
I feel like that's a poor decision on her part.
I know, but look, it all worked out for her in the end.
It's a testament to how much I love this film, is I was talking about what film I should do for this to my friend. And I was like, actually, I don't even know if Sugar and Spice was a flop, because it's such a good film. It has 28% on Rotten Tomatoes.
No, the reviews are not good. And this made...
It made 11 million or something.
It made like... It did end up making a profit, but it was like so tiny.
Yeah.
So
but
small.
But also, I would say the budget for it, I would imagine, was pretty small, because the entire film is like filmed in like four different places.
Yeah.
It also, something I noticed about it, although it's very of its time with the references, you wouldn't be able to really put a year on it.
No, because even it felt earlier to me than 2001. Like, I still thought like 90s.
Yeah. And there's no like mobile phones, or the cars are all very generic. The uniforms are very generic. The school's very generic. So you wouldn't be able to put a time on it. It's also filmed in Minnesota, and it's set in Minnesota, but they never mentioned that fact. I only found that out from reading about it today. Like, it's called Lincoln High School. Again, very generic. Could be anywhere in America.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole point of it is that it's supposed to be set in Minnesota, but they just completely forget to mention that the whole way through.
Could be anywhere. Use your imagination.
Yeah.
What do you think is the appeal of these kind of teen movies, and I suppose specifically the cheerleader genre? Because obviously we know, like, whatever about this, Bring It On spawned like 800 other Bring It Ons, Till Death Do Us Part, you know what I mean? Whatever the other titles are. People just really gravitate towards these movies, but I wonder why.
And I was thinking maybe we gravitate towards them because it's so different from Irish school culture. Like, I went in all girls convent school, so like we didn't even know men existed. So the thought of even like a high school, do you know what I mean, is quite alien to us. And then, but that can't be the case because they're huge in America as well. I think it maybe is, it kind of speaks to the insecure awkwardness of being a teenager, you know, the way like from like 13 to 16 you're just embarrassed to breathe, like it's just humiliating to like be outdoors. So I think maybe that's part of it, and also the notion that you want to fit in, like everyone wants to be a cheerleader, everybody wants to be the quarterback. And I often wonder, like, is it actually reflective of what school is like in America? I don't know. I don't really have any. Do I have any American friends? No.
We've had a few Americans on the podcast, so I could ask them.
Yeah, your friends with Celebrity Memorable Club.
Yeah, they would be able to give me 100% the answer on this.
But it must be in some way realistic because there's been a million films.
Yeah, but even now, like the contemporary examples of like the, I haven't seen this now, but well, do Revenge on Netflix, or like Heartbreak High is another recent one.
Even like think back to like Grease.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's been going for that long. There must be some truth in it somewhere.
Yeah.
But I do think the reason I like this film so much is, like, first of all, it's very woman-centered. Like, men are a very byproduct of this, in this film. And also, like, the one main man in it, Jack, is, like, very, very sweet, but also stupid.
Yeah.
A moron. Yeah, a total moron. Yeah. And it's all about just, like, girls sorting, being practical and sorting shit out for themselves.
My favourite genre of movie. In terms of other movies that were out that year, like, it's kind of impossible to compare because you had like the first installments of Harry Potter, Fast and the Furious, Spy Kids.
A bit different from Spy Kids, another film I rented excessively from Extra Vision.
You rented 3D one?
Well, no, because like we probably got our TV off the back of a lorry.
So I know, like, but like I'm not saying I had a fucking 3D TV at home either. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't that the 3D effects were working.
It was like, Jesus, they were really far ahead in Cork.
No, do you remember they went into a video game? Yeah, we had all 3D TVs. Anyway, that franchise is just iconic. I hope someone comes on and does that.
Spy Kids. It's not a flop though.
Oh yeah, I suppose it's not. No. But the third one is, kind of.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
I don't know. I'm willing to stretch these parameters just to talk to people about things that I like.
I loved Spy Kids. Loved Harry Potter as well.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
But you said that your first interaction with Sugar and Spice was renting it.
We rented it from Extra Vision. I remember me and my dad used to take me and my brother to Extra Vision on a Saturday night and be like, just pick a DVD, because they were going out in the piss. So he was like, just pick a DVD so you'll be quiet for the babysitter or whatever. And we went down. And I obviously was about, well, I was 10 in 2001. But I obviously must have just seen like the cheerleader thing and was like, oh, I'll get this. And then, well, I did this with so many films. We could have just bought the video. Like, we rented it so often. Like, it would have been like,
there's certain
films. I even said to my mommy about it. I was like, oh, I'm going on this podcast, I'm talking about Sugar and Spice. And she was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
That's how much of a mark it's left on your
household. Yeah, she was like, I could act that thing myself. It's like, yeah, because then if you had to hand it back the next day, you also watched it in the morning.
Just in case you forgot or
just
something.
Just to get your money's worth out of the DVD.
Oh my God. I'm trying to think of the movies that I like constantly rented.
Spy Kids is an hour on ours. Spy Kids and Sugar and Spice.
The Little Rascals movie, I think, was a big one for me. And the S Club 7 movie.
Oh, don't know if I've seen that.
Seeing Dublin. Where they're all like, they're cloned or whatever. Right. And there was a song in it. I was like, when you're a clone, you know you're never alone. So tell me who do you think you are? I want to do that as well if anyone's going to talk about
the
that.
Dolly the Sheep theme tune.
Traumatic. Let's talk about these reviews. As you said, 28% on Rotten Tomatoes. Someone wrote, though this cheerleader comedy has an intriguing premise, it's too empty-headed and saddled with too many lame jokes to live up to it. And then we
the reviews are quite vicious. I was reading them this morning. I was like, get lads, it's a cheerleader film. Like, what were you expecting, Schindler's List?
But this is the thing. And then look, you had someone like Brendan Kelly of Variety said that it was quite a smart little film with a surprising satirical edge, which was the way I kind of found it. And then someone else said it was like fun and like raunchy and
someone
a bit
saucy. Good point, and they were just like, it's supposed to be a dark comedy, but doesn't go far enough either way, so it's not dark enough and it's not funny enough.
Yeah,
I think the idea on paper would have been was a lot better than the actual execution of it. I think there could have been went a lot further with the darkness, and they could have made it at least slightly funny.
Yeah, like,
a lot of it when you're watching, all you're just like, oh, wouldn't get away with that joke now. Like, you wouldn't be able to say that.
No, but even I had written down as I was watching it, the opening cheer number is to Gary Glitter, which
yes,
I mean,
that's a choice that was made.
What else did I James Marsden was a lash from day one. I thought when he gets hit by the football, it was pretty funny.
Yeah, and the book where they tell the parents that she's pregnant, and then when they're sitting in the car after, and Diane says, when he said he didn't want to see our effing faces ever again, did he mean in life or when your man wakes up?
That was pretty funny. I don't think I had anything else written down in terms of like
actual things like
lies.
That, they could have went harder on.
Yeah.
Like the fact that they were on their own. And, like, it doesn't appear clear to me how they even had money to rent that apartment, because if he was only working in Extravision or Blockbuster or whatever it was, like, and she wasn't working and they were both still at school, I was like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they made it seem still quite idyllic in a way. Like, I just...
Oh, that was the other criticism. There was other criticism when it came out that it was glamorizing teen pregnancy.
I mean...
It didn't look glamorous to me. I don't want to rob a bank. She did eat a lot of Snickers, though.
Yeah.
Snickers clearly had some sort of product placement in that film, because she eats Snickers, like, in every scene when she's pregnant.
Yeah. Like, there was, like, a couple of Sony boxes as well. I was like, Spawn. My Spawn thing was going off.
Yeah.
How the hell did they afford that apartment?
Because she gets a job in the Walmart bank, and then that's the bank that they rob.
But they're also still in high school at this point. Like, what the fuck was the rent? Zero monies. Like, it was just...
Maybe because he was the quarterback, someone was like a really big... Oh, that's the other thing. Their landlord is quite clearly a criminal.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, of course. Because remember, he's dropping off the stuff. And yeah, they're
He leaves, like, stolen goods in their house, and that's how they get a TV.
He's like, you didn't see me. And then they're watching on the TV.
So the moral of the story is like, love with criminals and you'll get free stolen goods.
Yeah. Live with criminals. Don't be a grass. Any other lessons?
Well, the reason they get away with it is because the girl who is going to grass really wants to be in the cheerleading squad. So they say, right, you can be the captain of the cheerleading squad if you don't grass on us. So maybe the rule is just to be popular and good looking and you'll get away with everything in your life.
Yeah, and don't have integrity.
No integrity.
No integrity whatsoever. What do you think of the endings for all of them? Because it does that classic thing as well of like, where are they now? Or what happened to them for the credits?
That's my favourite way to end a film.
Oh, like, so good. Every film should end like
the
that.
The hold that had on 90s cinema. Like, you know, it was the end of The Little Rascals too. He was like, this is what this person's doing. Remember the Titans also has that?
Yeah.
So what are they? So Melissa George moves to New York. Meets Conan O'Brien and they get married.
Yeah. And she's in like Scream 8 or something.
She's in Scream 8.
Very
funny.
That's
what it is, yeah. And then Mina Savari appeals her mommy's prison sentence and gets her out of jail.
Real life Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah. Maybe that's where Kim got the idea.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I could see Kim sitting and watching Sugar and Spice. And then So I completely lost the train of thought now. I'm thinking of Kim Kardashian. Diane's ma. Also, a thing I didn't like. Diane's parents come back into her life and they're like, oh, now that Jack is a Jack becomes a senator.
Yeah.
And then he runs for senator or whatever. And then Diane's parents come back into her life when Jack is a senator. So it's like, oh, well, you've had your kid now and your husband's a senator. So, like, we'll have you back.
Yeah.
And then her parents start up the Diane teenage pregnancy cheerleader fund.
Yeah, pregnant teenage cheerleader fund or something for high school.
That's the way the follow-up is. It's like, so no pregnant cheerleader will ever have to rob a bank again.
Yeah.
Which is very sweet.
Yeah, that is very sweet. What do the rest of them do then?
Oh, the holy girl who says whore all the time, she starts her own equestrian school.
Yes.
Because obviously she's on the horses.
Yeah. Every single stereotype you could think of.
Yeah, she's a horsey girl. And then, oh yeah, the smart girl goes to Harvard.
Boring.
And she invents a pizza box and now she owns a private island in the Virgin Islands.
Oh, she owns Guava,
invented some sort of pizza box.
Yeah. And they all lived happily ever
they
after.
They all lived happily ever after. They robbed a bank, they got away with it. And, and then their friend whose dad sells them the guns, she becomes a glamour model.
I loved that.
I loved that.
I was obsessed with her when she popped up because I only know her as the young doll that Ross gets with
in
Friends.
She's Ross's like teenage girlfriend and Friends.
I remember her name, but yeah, and they're like having the water balloon fight.
Not Brad Pitt. Bruce Willis's daughter.
Yes. Yeah. That's a better reference. A better reference.
But she becomes a glamour model for a gun magazine.
As you do.
That is glamorizing guns. Critics had a point.
Maybe not the rest of it, but certainly that bit. If there ever was to be a sequel to this, which I highly doubt, but look, this is where dreams come to live on Flap Culture. How would you see it working or what would you like to see happen? Because I can imagine them, because I suppose the thing with the ending of that movie is that we don't really see them all together in later life as adults. And that's what I'd like to see.
Okay. What could happen is that it's a cold case.
Okay.
And then the cops come back and arrest them all again.
Right.
And the sequel is about how they're going to get out of it. And obviously, Mina Safaris is a solicitor now as well. So that's why they would all come back. And it would be a huge political scandal because Jack is a senator and his wife is now under arrest for robbing a bank when she was a teenager. And that would be the sequel. Oh my God, let's do this.
I'm
really into it.
That's such a good idea.
And it would be an even bigger scandal because Conan O'Brien's wife is also arrested.
Yeah.
The woman who invented the pizza box, they can't find her. She's on her island.
Yeah.
She can't be extradited.
Make the miniseries now.
Someone phone RT.
I'm so obsessed with this. Do you reckon James Marsden remembers this?
Probably not. What else does he be in now?
What else was he in? Oh, I had it written down. He's in, okay, so there's a sequel to Enchanted out this year called Disenchanted. He's in that.
Is that the stuff they were filming in Wicklow?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
He was in Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Not one I've seen.
Which was out this year. And he's also going to be in Unfrosted, the untold Pop-Tart story from Jerry Seinfeld.
You've made this up.
I swear to God I haven't. He's not that much else. Like, I think he popped up again in Westworld, but who gives a fuck about...
27
Dresses.
Oh, I've seen that. I've seen that.
Iconic. Can someone please come on and do 27 Dresses with me as well?
Seen it on a plane.
Oh, that's a perfect plane movie.
Yeah, and very good.
He's also in The Notebook.
Who the fuck is he in The Notebook?
He's the husband that she nearly marries in The Notebook.
I really need to rewatch
The Notebook. He's like a sailor or something.
Yeah.
2000s X-Men.
2000s X-Men, the first one.
Yeah.
That'd be a good flop. Someone should do that.
I can't remember what he's fucking Cyclops, isn't he?
It could be. I only know Halle Berry in that. Okay, there you go.
You could be speaking a different language.
Thief is just like, sure. So there you go.
What a film.
What a film.
Highly recommend it.
What's your elevator pitch for anyone who has listened to this and still isn't convinced?
You won't feel like you've wasted your time.
It's a nice little watch.
I was really hungover last night and just...
Did it help or hinder your hangover?
Oh, absolutely helped.
Okay.
It's a feel-good film about sticking it to the man and anti-choice parents.
Absolutely. We love it. We love to see it.
And no grassing.
Aoife, you are an incredible journalist. I'm obsessed with you. Where can people read more of your work and find out more about you?
Yeah, I am currently writing all things politics at the Sunday Times. And I try not to be on Twitter anymore, but I am on Twitter at Aoife Gracemore and Instagram at Aoife Gracemore. I'm deciding I'm going to use Instagram a bit more because the people are just nicer over there.
Yeah.
And I've had to come off. I'm not off Twitter, but I have deleted the app from my phone.
Yeah, it's a cesspool.
It is.
Like, it's just the worst of the worst.
It really is. There's just no benefit, I think, to be on there anymore.
Absolutely not.
Anyway, so...
so bye.
It's a different podcast.
I don't know where you're going to find the time now between doing your day job, writing a book, and also writing this miniseries sequel.
It's going to be a lot, but like, I really feel like whatever money I make from writing a book of Witch and Fiend will only be trebled if I write a money series about Sugar and Spice 2.
Someone, please.
Sugar and Spice 2, this time.
This time it's saltier. This time it's spicier.
This time it's saltier.
Spice again. Spicing all
or
over the
just
world.
Just called Sugar and Spice 2, not the bakery in Wexford.
I have to clarify, not the bakery in Wexford. Aoife Moore, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'd love to have you back on. Is there anything else you think you'd talk about?
Oh, I have like the worst taste in
incredible.
In
that's the entire point of this podcast.
The worst taste in films. I'll be back. I'll talk about something else.
Okay, have a think and come back to me. We'll get you back in the hot seat. Aoife, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on Flop Culture.
Thank you.
And you can hear Aoife on Catch Up with Louise McSharry every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts. I leave all her other links below. Also, keep an eye out for her book, which is coming out soon. I'm sure she'll tell me. I probably should have asked her before I recorded this. But it is coming out soon and it's going to be brilliant. And I cannot wait to read it. And I cannot wait to have her back. I'm going to talk about something else and we might get drunk and it'll be great. Finally, let's talk Top of the Flops.
You're a flop. Flop.
Top of the Flops this week, we've got a doubleheader, right? Reese Witherspoon and Ashton Kutcher are Top of the Flops for trying to convince us that they don't absolutely hate each other's guts, right? So they're currently promoting their Netflix movie, Your Place or Mine, which when you listen to this, it'll be out tomorrow. So February 10th on Netflix. It's a rom-com. It's Ashton's first rom-com since No Strings Attached, 2011. And obviously like Reese's rom-com Gold. If anyone wants to do an episode on Sweet Home Alabama, this is an open invitation. Please get in touch. And all the red carpet picks between the two of them promoting this movie, I mean, it's giving social distance. It's giving Avril Lavigne meet and greet picture. They could not be, it's giving Mizenhedge and Malenhedge, you know what I mean? They could not be standing further away from each other, right? Like there is, it's a romantic comedy. There's no romance. And I highly doubt there's comedy. You know what I mean? There's not a little bit of kindling between them. No spark, no heat, minus degrees, right? So Mila Kunis, who's married to Ashton Kutcher, saw these photos and was like, right, I need some more money in the pension pot. And he needs to come good on his check for whatever he got paid for this movie. I don't actually know how this works with Netflix and everything else, whatever, assuming he's paid. How well the movie does doesn't matter. He's been paid, right? But Mila Kunis sees these pictures and is like, nobody's going to watch this movie if everyone thinks they bloody hate each other. So she gets on the blower to Reese, right? She emails Reese, apparently. This is what Reese said to today in an interview. And she emailed Reese and was like, you guys look so awkward on the red carpet together. And Reese is trying to play it off and it's like, it's all in good fun. And she says this sentence, which is the most like inhuman, like whatever that chatbot is that is threatening to take all of our jobs. This is like something that would say. It's just fun because when you know a girlfriend so much, it was just fun to get to know her significant other because I've loved her for so long. Ashton is so professional. He's the funniest guy. I mean, such a goofball. We had so much fun. The lady doth protest too much. And then Ashton had to come out and he did, he was on Chicks in the Office, that podcast. And he essentially was like, if I touch her, people are going to say we're having an affair, which some people are drawing comparisons to when Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain were promoting Scenes of a Marriage. Is that what that movie is called or show is called? They were promoting that thing together. You know, and he was like kissing up and down her arm and it was all a bit like they were only short of shagging on the red carpet. And everyone was like, oh my God. And everyone was like, they were having an affair. And from that perspective, I'm like, okay. But then I'm also like, is that it? Nobody was asking you to tongue her. You know, we were just asking like, just stand a little bit closer, you know, like pretend, be friendly, be cordial. You know what I mean? So he was just like, yeah, if I stand next to her and put my hands in my pockets, there's no chance that could be a rumour. And then the rumour is that we don't like each other. And then again, he's at the film's premiere in Los Angeles and he's talking to Variety and he's like, again, this the fakest sentence I've ever heard. Honestly, I think I had more fun shooting this movie than I ever had, ever, in his entire life. It was genuinely a choice. I didn't need to do it, he says. And it's that scene in The Simpsons where Skinner has the laser at his head, but it's Mila. It's Mila with a Glock. I didn't have to do it. It wasn't like a career building block. It was like, I want to do this. Again, the lad doth protest too much. I got to be in scenes across from a genuine movie star. She's such a movie star. It was so wonderful and fun and funny and light. There was never a dark day. There was never a day that everything went wrong. I got spoiled. Oh my God. Okay. If anyone watches this, because I have absolutely no intention of watching this movie, it's basically like a house swap movie and then they swap houses and they realise that they're in love. Someone go watch this, come back to me, tell me if it's good, tell me if the hatred is palpable in that movie as well, because I would be very interested to hear. And it might feature on a future episode of Flop Culture, who knows, but I'm not watching it in the near future, so note that. Thank you so much for listening. If it's your first time, if it's your manyth time, I appreciate it so much. We are flapculture_pod on Instagram and TikTok. You can get in touch as always at helloflapculture@gmail.com. Rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts to get a personalized Bop or Flap recommendation. And you can also leave a 5-star review on Spotify. Ratings help people find the show. It's hugely appreciated by me. So if you can take 2 seconds out of your day, really, 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 really grateful for that. This podcast has been edited by Adam Chan. Artwork is as always by Brian Lambert. Until next week, we'll see you then. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.